hesitate. After a moment of silence, he looked me straight in the face.
"Maybe I am," he said. "Maybe he should never have spoken those words. Maybe I should never have heard them. As Mr. Honda said at the time, a person's destiny is something you look back at afterwards, not something to be known in advance. I do believe this, however. It now makes no difference either way. All I am doing is fulfilling my obligation to go on living."
The bus came, and Lieutenant Mamiya favored me with a deep bow. Then he apologized for having taken up my valuable time.
"Well then, I shall be on my way," he said. "Thank you for everything. I'm glad in any case that I was able to hand you the package from Mr. Honda. This means that my job is done at last. I can go home with an easy mind."
Using both his right hand and the artificial one, he deftly produced the necessary coins and dropped them into the fare box. I stood there and watched as the bus disappeared around the corner. After it was gone, I felt a strange emptiness inside, a hopeless kind of feeling like that of a small child who's been left alone in an unfamiliar neighborhood. Then I went home, and sitting on the living room couch, I opened the package that Mr. Honda had left me as a keepsake. I worked up a sweat removing layer after layer of carefully sealed wrapping paper until a sturdy cardboard box emerged. It was a fancy Cutty Sark gift box, but it was too light to contain a bottle of whiskey. I opened it to find nothing inside. It was absolutely empty. All that Mr. Honda had left me was an empty box. Book 2, Bird as Prophet, July to October 1984. 1. As concrete as possible. Appetite in literature. Kumiko didn't come back that night. I stayed up until midnight reading, listening to music, and waiting for her. But finally I gave up and went to bed. I fell asleep with the light on. It was 6 in the morning when I woke. The full light of day shone outside the window. Beyond the thin curtain, birds were chirping. There was no sign of my wife. The white pillow lay there, high and fluffy. As far as I could make out, no head had rested on it during the night. Her freshly washed, neatly folded summer pajamas lay on top of the night table. I had washed them. I had folded them. I turned off the lamp beside my pillow and took a deep breath, as if to regulate the flow of time. I did a tour of the house in my pajamas. I went first to the kitchen, then surveyed the living room, and looked into Kumiko's room. I checked the bathroom, and just to make sure, tried the cupboards. There was no sign of her anywhere. The house seemed more hushed than usual. I felt as if by moving around, I alone was to blame for disrupting the quiet harmony of the place, and for no good reason. There was nothing more for me to do. I went to the kitchen, filled the kettle, and lit the gas. When the water boiled, I made coffee and sat at the kitchen table to take a sip. Then I made toast and ate some potato salad from the refrigerator. This was the first time in years that I had eaten breakfast alone. Come to think of it, apart from a single business trip, we had never once missed breakfast together in all the time since our marriage. We had often missed lunch, and sometimes even dinner, but never breakfast. We had a tacit understanding about breakfast. It was almost a ritual for us. No matter how late we might go to bed, we would always get up early enough to fix a proper morning meal and take the time to enjoy it together. But that morning, Kumiko was gone. I drank my coffee and ate my toast alone, in silence. An empty chair was all I had to look at. I looked and ate and thought about the cologne that she had been wearing the morning before. I thought about the man who might have given it to her. I thought about her lying in a bed somewhere with him, their arms wrapped around each other. I saw his hand.